Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Episode 3 of Creeper, the story of sex, death, and the infinite void, continues with graphic scenes of mental health and violence. If you are at risk of being affected by content of this nature, please stop listening. To everyone who is struggling or knows someone who is struggling, please find the start of a mental health care toolkit at mightymoonmedia.com.
The whole thing is just a whirlwind. It's not a normal band. It's not just like, oh yeah, let's write some songs. Oh yeah, let's play some shows. Like, that. What goes into it and what is behind it is just like, it's a whole book's worth.
Will and Ian spent 9 years in a van in punk and hardcore bands. They took everything from punk that they loved and infused all these other aspects. And some artists don't like going into tough situations or whatever. But I mean, fuck, if like that's A to B, well, we're going to go A, B, C, D, E, F, fuck off a couple of letters, and then get to wherever you're supposed to be getting.
The thing with Creeper is that it's just part of the whole thing of the experience of Creeper is just this utterly insane, unbridled creativity. It's madness, but yet at the same time, there's always this really strong vision.
There's this cliche that, like, look out for it. When a band has a new album coming out and people do the through hell to deliver this record, frequently it's bollocks, you know, it's just trying to ham up a narrative to tell a story. But in Creeper's case, I think there was some incredibly heavy things going on.
That day, I had to throw myself into situations that I never could ever have foreseen happening.
Thank you for calling 999. What's your emergency, please?
This is so weird talking about this so normally, because it's like, it's not normal. I've talked to people about, like, the outline. Like, I've talked to people and said, oh, you know, I had a manic episode. I as a result, I had to go into hospital because I was really unwell. But I've never even said this stuff out loud. I think that's why it's so weird to me. I'm just saying it like I'm telling a story when actually it was really real. So I collected my thoughts. I stomped around, started just about to go into the church, and my wife Kat just turned up, and she was stood like right in front of me, and she grabbed my arm. She grabbed hold of my arm and, like, there was just like a look in her eye, and I was like, fuck, this top trumps what? I was like, this top trumps the whole thing. And she was just, one sec. So yeah, she just had like a look in her eye, and I could just tell like she had snapped in some way. Like, she was super like scared and worried. That was like a moment in the movie, you know, like where everything slows down for a second, and I'm just like, I catch the glimpse in her eye, and like, but then everything speeds back to reality. well, my reality at the time. Yeah, the mission. So everything snapped back to that, and I tried to break from her grip. I was so close to the church, like literally like just outside the door. And she was grabbing me. She was like, no, don't do it. Like, just think about this, slow down. What's going on? And then I managed to like wriggle free, and I ran around the church, and she was chasing after me, like trying to get me. And like around the back of the church was like Matt Reynolds and Will Gould, and they were like, they had like their back to the wall, like stealthy ninjas. And they just pounced on me, and they grabbed me, and they pinned me right down on the floor. And like, I was furious. I was like, because this was reality, like this was what was happening. I couldn't understand why they would want to stop me. I was like, why? Why do you want me to stop? But anyway, like, they pinned me down, and it was really, really tough. Like, Matt was super strong. Like, I didn't expect him to be that strong. I was sure I could have wriggled free and gotten away. And I remember at one point just screaming, "How are you so strong?"
And I was just not prepared for it. Matt Reynolds came and met me, and we were waiting at the train station while the police said they were going to arrive and speak to us there. In the meantime, what happened was Ian's WhatsApp had pinged up his location. Which honestly was a lifeline for us in locating him. And Kat had called us and let us know that he was heading to this church up by the high street. So me and Matt, the police were waiting 5 minutes for the police, but they hadn't arrived. And basically, there was no way we could let him get inside that church. So me and Matt left the train station and ran all the way to where his WhatsApp had pinged and found him with Kat. And that's when we had to begin this really awful and kind of harrowing task of trying to chill him out and calm him down and kind of pin him to the floor.
Kat was ringing the ambulance. I think they rang the police. And then they pinned me down for a bit and nobody came, so it swapped over. Like, Kat helped Matt hold me down. And then Will rang the police and the ambulance as well, I think, because I might be remembering this wrong, because obviously it was like I don't know, like after the event happened and like after hospital and stuff, I don't know how, but my mind sort of blocked it all out. So my memory is probably a little bit blurry here, but yeah, I just remember like scuffing around, like trying to get them off of me, screaming at them, like screaming at everybody around me. And like at one point there were just like passers-by just stopping and watching, and it was really fucking weird. Like, I just felt like a sideshow, you know? Like, but in my mind at the time, like, I just couldn't understand why they were stopping me from doing this. Like, it was in the best interest of everyone to let me go, because the money was going to siphon up and the government were going to, MI5 were going to launch a nuclear warhead, and it was going to kill us all. I was saving the planet. One of the things I remember really well was, it was outside a block of flats, And I don't know why this makes me so upset. I think it's just looking back, like little acts of kindness are really big things. And I remember a guy coming out of the flats with a little folded up towel, and he placed it underneath my head. Because I kept banging my head on the floor. And now in hindsight, that was so sweet. Like, I was, I was raging, like, I was shouting, I was swearing, I was saying I was going to burn the church down. And this one, despite all of that, like, chaos, he just came over, super gentle, super kind, and just slid it under my head. Like, most people would have just been scared. But he was super calm. And he just went, "There you go, mate." Oh, God, that's most of the bad part out of the way. I'll carry on in one sec.
He was really struggling. He was really, really screaming. And I felt like he really felt like I was betraying him and by doing this at the time. He was screaming and Matt was brilliant. And I held his legs down. And me and Kat took turns to call an ambulance and the police. And it was just really hard, man. It was just a really... really, really rough day. It was outside one of the churches that we filmed the video for the outdoor of Black Rain on the last record in Southampton. So it all felt very apt in some weird roundabout way. And the ambulance took so long to get there, even though it probably didn't in real life, but it just felt like it. It just felt like it was never going to arrive. And by the time it did, he was still completely set in his ways.
That whole thing was going on for like an hour. I had like scuffs all up my arm and like bruises all over me because I was wriggling and struggling, trying to get free. Like at one point, my muscles just gave up because I couldn't wriggle around or push anybody off any for any longer. But yeah, then the ambulance turned up, and I wasn't very nice to him. I was screaming at him, and I just remember him saying, "Don't be like this with me. I'm here to help you out. Like, please respect me." And I was like... because I was convinced he was part of the thing, you know? He was on it. He was in there with the police and the religion. I was like, "What the fuck are you doing here? Like, back off. You're part of this. I don't need you around." I guess it was something to do with authority now in hindsight. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, and he started being really kind to me, and I was like, okay, I think like the organization you work for is awful, but I respect you. I think you're a good guy. And he was like, "Can you get into the ambulance?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to get in the ambulance." But then Kat turned around and she was like, "Please, please do it." And throughout this whole ordeal, she was like my anchor. Every time anybody wanted me to do anything, I was like, no, fuck that. Until she asked, and I was like, "Okay, I'll do anything for you."
And as the the two ambulance people, the paramedics, lifted him from the floor and put him into the back of the ambulance. He was still screaming to me as they closed the door that I had to carry on his work, and now it was my turn to take over, and I had to do it for him as they closed the door on him. And I'll never ever forget the amount of guilt that I felt putting my friend, even though I knew it was what was right, you know, it was the right thing to do. I knew that was the right thing, but putting your friend in somewhere where he was on his own and he was believing all this stuff, and he was desperately asking for my help, even though it was just something I couldn't do for him. He was begging me to help him, and I couldn't, and I just couldn't. And then me and Matt went, we walked back to the high street after the ambulance had pulled away with him, because that was the last time I saw him for quite some time. And we went to a coffee shop and around the corner, and we just both sat down, like in silence, really. And I just began crying and cried and cried and cried my eyes out there. I don't think I would have been able to do that had me and Ian not had that experience in Los Angeles, where I was learning to cry again when Ian was there. And now, with Ian helping me learn that kind of more sensitive side of myself, now I was experiencing it without him being there. And it was really, really odd. And I felt like really harrowed and just genuinely I felt like my heart, it just felt like it was just properly aching. I felt like I felt really, really, really awful. It was terrible, and I was so scared for him, because I couldn't even imagine what that must be like. At the time, we were doing what was right, but it was such a quick series of decisions in a row that led to that happening. You know, when do you start wrestling with your friend? You know, when do you start like having a fight with your friend in the street? Because when you're about to call armed police on your friend, when are you about to lock your friend up? You know, like, when are you about, this is you're my best friend. This is my songwriting partner. This is, I built my entire life with him. I can't think of many people who know me better than Ian Miles does. And for all my faults. And it was the worst. I think it might be up there with the worst day of my life, I think. And it wasn't even me it happened to. I was just a witness to it. But I do remember, this is a really silly little part of this story, but I wanted to cut my hair for ages. I'd had long hair for the campaign since the beginning of the album, the last album. I wanted to cut it all off midway through, but it would have messed up all the photos we had and what we were doing with the record. And so everyone was saying, you know, just hold on. And I remember it was after I came out of that coffee shop, I went to this weird little barber's called Selly's on East Street. And I felt like Sansom and Delilah all at once, you know. And I just had all my hair cut all off in that one day. I'll never forget, that was the day that I lost all my long hair. And I just, that day completely changed my appearance, let alone everything. I don't quite know why I did that on that day. It just felt like, for some reason, it felt important. Like I couldn't do anything more. Like with Ian, I was crying for like an hour in that coffee shop with Matt. I should have just gone home, but for some reason, I went and got a haircut. I cut all my hair off to like the shortest it had been since I was, I don't know, like 17 or something. And I remember thinking that was a really odd thing. Like, I still don't really know what my thought process was at the time of doing that. And it kind of felt like as my hair started growing back, the record was, from that point, as long as my hair's got, is kind of the more back to normal we've got. November 1st, we broke the band up on stage. This all happened in like the week after that. You know, we had all this tragedy. My mum's partner died, and then Ian got sectioned the next day. But we were supposed to go on the Friday. I think Ian got sectioned on the Monday. And then on the Friday, we were supposed to travel out to Los Angeles. And in that week, we had two tickets ready to get on the plane. In that week, I had to work out what to do. Do we not go? And it would have been completely fine, I think, to not have gone. Sometimes I wonder whether that was the right move, to be honest, even though we've ended up with something that we're both really proud of. Just I think what happened in that moment where I remember being at a bar that week when I was trying to deal with stuff, and a friend of mine said to me, I said, can I just be frank with you? And I said, yeah. He said, what the hell are you doing? He was like, you shouldn't be going out to like on your own. This has all got a bit out of control. And in my head, all that I could think of was, we've got to keep this together. Because if he comes out of this, you know, he might not get better for another 6 months or something. And if he comes out and we've not got this together anymore, this will have cost him everything, you know? So, I don't know. It's a difficult thing because it's very difficult not to feel like I had to kind of grab the bull by the horns a little bit myself, and I didn't want it to feel like I was trying to take over this project. And that's one of the things I was concerned about, because there'd be no one else to make a call with me. But either way, we had to kind of keep the flow of things in motion. And so I got on a plane on the Friday on my own. There was an empty seat next to me where Ian should have been. And I just began what would be some of the hardest and kind of darkest moments of the record. I remember landing in Los Angeles on my own and being like really daunted, like being like, you normally come to this place as a tourist, you know? Oh, if you're coming here to work, you're normally with somebody else. And I remember just thinking, oh, like this is the most responsible thing I've ever done is probably this moment now, trying to make sure I have to kind of, no one's going to help me, you know, I can't like, you know, there's no safety net for me if this all goes wrong. If I get mugged, or if I lose my bank card, if I lose my passport, you know, There's no one else here, you know. It's just me around Hollywood on my own, and that's when the next part of this, where the drinking and just the real true darkness crowbarred its way into the story.
Sex, death, and the infinite void. The very thoughts we're taught to avoid. I breathe them out as you breathe them in. My rent to heart is overdue. I'm such a disappointment to you. We're 30 now, we should have thought this through. And at night, we get so drunk. We try to feel nothing at all. And all my friends, all my friends, all my friends hurt. All my friends.
This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.